All right, we are live for a Friday edition of the Mike and Mario Show. Excited to be back. Looking forward to talking about all this past week's events as well as what's coming. But Mario, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well, Mike. And you?
I am excellent, my friend. I'm excellent. Excited to connect again. And lots of things worth touching on once I cut my volume down over here. Give me 1 second here.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Now I can't even activate. Ain't that something? Now my mouse don't want to work. But anyway, I'm going to try to figure this out. We get started. Oh, man. So for that being the case, for those tuning in, once I get this, man, ain't that something? Anyway, glitches. But we're live, man. So lots of things worth touching on. And so I guess the most immediate news is happens to be those horrific job numbers that came out today, which is well below what was expected. But are we surprised given the fact that this recovery narrative is not really playing into the hands of the orchestrators that be? But what are your thoughts on that as I pull up this article real quick?
Yes, it's a second month in a row where it was a lot less than expected. I think last month it was expected over 600,000.
Yeah.
It came out at 230. It was revised up to 366 last month. But this number now for September that came out this month was expected 500,000 non-farm payroll jobs, came out at 194.
Yeah.
The unemployment rate went down, but that's because probably a lot of people gave up looking for work.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it means. It doesn't mean it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Hourly earnings are still quite high, 0.6. And I think it's, I saw a tweet just recently before we came on, Sven Henrik, he's a Northman trader. He said the Fed increased its balance sheet from 3.6 trillion last year to 8.5 trillion. And they got the initial sugar rush, but it looks like it's now the effect of it is going down. And, and the other thing I would say, if you noticed on that number, you saw that government jobs dropped by 123,000. I think a lot of this recovery is based on government spending because the deficit in the last fiscal year was almost 15%. And if you look at the GDP equation, they add government spending to it. So if you'd taken away that deficit of GDP of 15%, the real private economy would be actually a lot worse. And they can't even hide that, though. And I think it's fairly convenient for the Federal Reserve. They might not have to start tapering, even though I saw that Jim Rickards, he thinks the Fed will taper in November because they like to see more proof from the data. They like to see 3 months in a row, even though I think, you know, the last 2 months have been pretty bad. But I don't think it matters. The Fed and all the other central banks, they need to keep rates really low and keep printing money or else everything will implode.
Yeah, it's amazing that they are even still playing on that narrative of tapering or not, just because the current environment we're in now, you know, all the true indicators reveal that things are slowing down drastically. And then you factor in, of course, the excuse they're using with the bottleneck and the supply issues, all that stuff like that makes it so that you have to continue to be accommodative. Like, why would you even mention pulling back some of that, you know, stimulus type stuff that would definitely cause issues in the market. But so it doesn't really make sense, but yet they're going to continue to run with it. And I kind of get the impression that they're waiting, or they definitely need an event of some kind to say that everything was going fine and we were on the road to recovery, but yet this happened. So there's another, but yet that's needed, I think. And it could be around the corner much more sooner than we think. So time will tell. But I want to offer.
I hadn't thought about that. You're right. We could see another crisis, maybe our cyber pandemic.
Cyber pandemic, and of course, this health situation. This agenda is not going away, and I think they're going to continue to use a variant. But yet, the Delta variant is getting old, and so I think there's another need for something new to pop up somewhere. So factor all that in. There'll be a need for some type of event, but yet. I want to touch on the supply to food situation, because I think that that's going to be another narrative that they, you know, try to either avoid or either use that as well. But when it comes to the empty shells, like the article you sent me, once I grabbed that one, I personally, on my side, haven't really noticed much. But yet, based upon this article here, the individual who wrote it talked about how just a shortage of everything, empty shelves. And I'm assuming people out there in the audience might have some scenarios where they came across, you know, some shelves that are not fully stocked. But as of right now, they are still supplies available. But of course, it's becoming a problem. But on your side, are you guys still having, I'm assuming, like the get the gas issues, or, you know, what's happening in the UK from what from your experience?
Yeah, I was able to fill up a little bit last week. My wife and I don't really use our car too much.
Yeah,
luckily we don't really need it that much. But I was lucky. I went to the biggest garage around, a petrol station, and there wasn't anything there. So and then I left and I went to another one, which is out of the way. It's on a main road, but not used that much. And luckily they had no gasoline, but they had diesel, and my car is diesel. So I didn't even have to queue up or be in a line. And I went in there, and the maximum I could put though was 35 pounds worth of diesel.
Yeah.
And the price was a lot higher than usual because they only had the souped up diesel. I'm a cheapskate. I put the cheapest one usually. But I just saw a tweet from Zero Hedge about half an hour ago that they're getting more and more closures of petrol stations or gas stations in the London area. So it's not getting better. I mean, I went to the supermarket with my wife a few days ago. Well, actually, it was on Monday. It feels like yesterday. But and usually, I guess Mondays are quieter because people go shopping on the weekend. Mm-hmm. So it's a really big supermarket, a Sainsbury's. It's one of the biggest ones. And there weren't many people there, but they had pretty much everything. But we keep reading, though, the stories that the there probably will be some shortages. And I think what they mean by shortages, you probably won't be able to get everything you want, but you're still going to get things.
Yeah.
So that article you showed there from The Atlantic, I don't agree with everything that guy said. But, you know, they never mention in the mainstream the fact that we've had decades of financialization, that we've outsourced, not only in the US, but in the UK especially. We've outsourced everything that we make here to foreign countries. And we run an economy, especially here, based on cheap credit, housing market speculation, borrowing. And we have one of the biggest casinos in the world, the City of London. Yeah. So we don't make real things anymore compared to the finance. The States probably a little better, but I think one of the problems with the States last year, I think there's a lot of meat shortages, is that you guys have a lot of stuff centralized, like the meat processing. Mm-hmm. There's not many. Right. And I think that's a symptom of the cheap credit, because when rates are at zero for so long, you get a lot of consolidation, bigger companies buying smaller ones, and the smaller mom and pop businesses, they don't have access to 0% credit from Goldman Sachs or JP Morgan. So you get this cannibalizing of smaller companies. And it makes less competition. So, and you get something like we had last year, which one could argue was a self, you know, an engineered crisis. Maybe that's what they want. They want to kill off even more the small businesses. Maybe this all these shortages and the supply chain problems, they don't have a problem with it, the powers that be. That's what they want.
All right. But I'm in full agreement with that one. And so that is just my motto. If they want more pain, and devastation so that they can further expand themselves into our lives with all these options and solutions that they've already put in play. And then as far as, you know, just here in the U.S., like we were touted, or the former administration was touting years ago about being energy independent. And just it looks like, you know, here leaders want to talk about having to tap into our oil reserves to combat inflationary pressures on our side as well. So it looks like they're kind of laying a foundation for the fact that we might have some energy issues coming real soon our way. So we'll see what this plays out. But as far as the actual shortage of goods and services, it's more so the withholding of goods and services, because I bring this up often on during the week. But the shipping container ships are out there, you know. So this little maritime chart here shows all the activity happening in the waters. But yeah, you just go around and as I zoom in, there's buku tons of ships out there. And so a lot of them are just parked, not moving. And up just is so all the goods and services we need are probably on those ships in the water. And it's also a matter of why are they not being able to flow in and out and unload. And then, of course, they'll say due to the regulations, health protocols and all types of stuff like that. So
well, we had those before last year, didn't we? So mm-hmm. why is it happening now? Right. I think one of the reasons why it's happening is like you shut the economy for 3, 6, 9 months. Mm-hmm. You injected with trillions of dollars while people are at home not working. And they go and buy loads of stuff.
Yeah.
And the system can't cope. It's like Rafi Farber said in his video recently. It's the analogy he used is that the Federal Reserve threw too much toilet paper in the toilet and got clogged up, and now you can't flush it. So yeah. that's what we're seeing. It's all disrupted, and I think it's partly as well. Subconsciously, I think producers, owners of natural resources, mm-hmm. they realize that the currencies are bad, mm-hmm. and they're withholding it.
Yeah, I was talking to Carl Denninger. I had him on the show, and he was talking about a lot of the concerns of manufacturers as well as on the retail side of just not being able to truly discover whatever the price of goods and services are. Given the fact that you can't really look forward or look ahead with all this inflationary pressures and determine what you'll be willing to either create or what you'll be willing to sell your goods for, given the fact that there's so much, as you know, backwardation in a lot of the commodity space, to where I might not want to sell my goods right now because I'm anticipating a shortage on my end. Therefore, I got to increase my prices now, but how much to be willing to sell to you? So hold on a second here. You know, so let's see if this thing irons itself out, which as of now, I don't think that's going to be the case. But yeah, it's going to be ongoing. And I don't see things. I don't see things getting better, because I don't think they want any of this to get better. I believe they want more pain. Kwame King, maybe, I appreciate you. Go ahead.
Maybe we are seeing the beginnings of hyperinflation, which is the loss of confidence in the currency, and mm-hmm. that might be something that these people, the powers that be, want, because that would wipe out all the debt, and that would be a good thing. A lot of people would be wiped out, of course, people who save in fiat currencies, people who have anything to do with the government, or people who have savings and bonds and everything like that.
Yeah.
We've never been worldwide in such a situation. So that's why it's so strange. Or I could be wrong and everything's going to come back to normal, but I just have a feeling it won't, because they seem to want to drag on all the limitations, all the regulations to do with this health crisis that mm-hmm. they brought about last year. And they don't want to seem to want to go back to normal. The other thing that I think is impacting a lot on this, and we got to be careful when we talk about it, is mm-hmm. all this net zero carbon, this climate change agenda. I was just reading that China now is asking its coal miners to increase extraction of coal, because they're getting shortages in China as well. And it says in the article that China was trying to curb coal coal consumption because it wants to look good in front of the world with all this carbon, net carbon thing. And I think we're paying a heavy price. It's all part of this, partly because of this agenda as well.
Yeah, no, watch this. Speaking of this, I'm just going to put this other article up here because I'm sure you saw it, but it looks like they want to make sure they control the narrative. But it's like, how do you, you know, by cracking down on people who deny, you know, that that's an issue, it's like, okay, why do you have to put so much effort into silencing and censoring things? Let it, let the truth speak for itself. If it's true, people will see it. People will just more than willingly buy into it. But yet by them censoring people, let you know that it's full of crap in a sense.
Yeah, but the thing is, it used to be called global warming. And that they can't use that anymore. So now it's climate change. I've made videos about this topic, and I don't deny anything. I just inform people to the fact that the people who started this agenda, and this was probably in the 70s, was the Rothschild family. And they had like a guy called Maurice Strong. He was a Canadian. They related to them business-wise. He went to work for the UN. And they started all this environmental movement. And it's all about control. Because it's a problem that's worldwide. That's worldwide. And it transcends national borders. So you can have like global rules. And it's not surprising that all the big banks, central banks, are all getting involved because it was the bankers who started it. I'm not denying it.
Right.
I'm just telling people who's behind it. And maybe if people woke up and realized that it's the people who brought you the 08 crisis, the people who are bringing you the inflation, they're the same people who are bringing you the climate change crisis.
Right. Very true. And so I'm not denying it.
I'm not denying it.
It's just the greater agenda behind it that people should be aware of. And so think about all the events that we experience. It usually starts off as some type of, you know, real large movement that they're trying to, you know, like, okay, there's a, I think I saw something about the UN talking about the need to get involved in helping investigate on how to stop racism. It's like, you know, okay, that sounds good, but then again, how would you go about doing that? And it's like, it's more than just a political issue. It's a moral / evil. I mean, it's more to the equation than just a governing body can come up with. And then on another note, the Pandora Papers situation came out Monday, or the website was put up over the weekend. And of course, all that stuff came out Monday, major news story. But yet, as soon as I saw it, I'm thinking like, wow, they're trying to use this as a global way to then push their taxation agenda, whether it be on the corporate level, more likely using the scapegoat of all the billionaires and their tax loops. But then this article here that I saw today says politicians and tax authorities across several continents launched fresh investigations after the Pandora Papers. And so I'm thinking like, wow, they're throwing a lot of people under the bus to accomplish their ultimate agenda, which is to pass some type of unified income tax across the board. And they're not going to close any of those loopholes, but then again, they're going to do something where they put a threshold like they're trying to do here in the U.S. Everybody above $400,000 will be taxed at a higher rate, and everybody below, there'll be no new taxes to you or some crap like that. But just once again, another agenda that will gain momentum globally because all these politicians were in several countries, and it's good to say they got a solution for this problem, I bet.
I noticed that someone commented on this Pandora Papers and that the fact that there is no, Americans on it, like fame, you know, very wealthy, or it was mostly like Russians and stuff. They try to mention Putin. They did mention Tony Blair and his wife, I guess, but which was good.
Although the activity is nothing illegal, it's just that it was never disclosed. So it's not illegal, but it just wasn't disclosed. Make them look bad, but it's just to get the narrative going and the talk going, I think.
The thing is, all the very wealthy Americans, all the hedge funds, Wall Street, all their money is offshore in Bermuda, Cayman Islands. So they do pay tax in the U.S., but most of their wealth is outside. It's in offshore trusts. And it's the same thing in the UK. They're not never going to go against, well, they won't go against those people.
They won't.
Because they control the, they're probably the people who leaked this document, mm-hmm. but they're making, I think there's someone from Jordan and countries like that. But
Ukraine, Nigeria.
Yeah, I mean, no one, what about Ray Dalio and George Soros and all the big hedge fund managers? All their money is offshore, like the hedge funds in New York and London. Mm-hmm. If you look at their legal status, the offices in New York and London, they're just advisory. You know, they do all the trading from London and New York, but they advise the hedge funds, which are based in the Cayman Islands, which are just post office box companies. Yeah. You go there and there's no one there. So what about that?
Yeah. So speaking of which, I just typed in list of Pandora Papers, and of course, a full list of people popped up. So this is the list of people named in the Pandora Papers. And I, as I mentioned earlier, all these people are puppets. They're just the first tier of people that they were willing to expose towards a greater agenda. But it's none of the individuals that are responsible for any of this of the central banking model, like the Rothschild families or any of those higher up names. Is, you know, generational in a sense. None of those individuals will be on here because they are the ones that
don't see any American flags on there.
Exactly. So something is wrong here. So this is literally a target of all the foreign entities.
It looks like mostly emerging markets or
I see Argentina.
What we used to call third world countries.
Yeah. We got a lot of these nations out here. So it's good to say that there's more people that's involved in this stuff than just those people there. But it is what it is, man. But speaking of which, given all this activity that's happening right now, the recovery narrative is declining. Just the concerns of stagflation is picking up like never before. And you sent me a graph here. I think it's from Tyvee Costa. And so just this right here shows you the divergence as to what's really happening out here. But yet, I don't think they're really using this as a narrative.
This, this U.S. break-even 10-year, that's based on this TIPS, which is Treasury Protected Securities.
Yeah.
And they're manipulated by the Federal Reserve because they do QE. Mm-hmm. But even then, you know, it looks pretty bad, doesn't it? Because I would say that inflation expectations are a lot higher than 2.5%.
Right. Exactly.
They're like 4 or 5. And now this is the Atlanta Fed GDP forecast. It's almost down to 1. Mm-hmm. So like I mentioned earlier in the live stream that I saw a tweet from Northman Trader about the sugar rush.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So it looks like the sugar rush is gone. And do I have a crystal ball? No, but I've done a lot of reading and studying of history.
Yeah.
This is exactly what happened in France during the revolution. In the aftermath, they decided to print a lot of assignats, the paper money. They used to get an improvement in the economy. And then after a while, the sugar rush went down. And at first, they were reluctant to do another issue because they were reluctant to start it all together. But then they said, well, let's do it again. It's really easy to keep printing and you can't stop it. And that's why I think it's all going to end in tears, unfortunately.
Yeah, I agree. So here's a thought. Now see that super chat there. So Pablo Pina says, anybody see the gold and silver skyrocket after non-farm payroll? And then shortly after that, a sudden drop. So I didn't notice that activity.
Yeah, it's par for the course, isn't it?
It's right on time. This happens too often for it to be just accidental. Like it's a deliberate. Yeah. So I wonder how many futures contracts were dumped onto the market off this one. How many billions of ounces was dumped to accommodate that?
JP Crazy, Morgan, man. The BIS, you know, and because gold and silver were doing well. But I think, it's frustrating, like in the short term, but I think gold and silver look starting to look a lot better. Mm-hmm. So I'm not concerned about it.
Oh, man. So here's Miles says, I understand the USD is the cleanest shirt in the dirty hamper, but what is the cause and effects of a continuous rising dollar? Can it continue? I think the so my personal opinion is that the when talking about the Dixie, that to me that's the that trade weighted dollar version of all the comparison of all those other currencies that are crap. So I think the world needs dollar steel so it can rise. So as all those other currencies have their issues, people will run the dollars for safety because they got to pay off their past debts. So in my opinion, a dollar could still go up. And once again, that doesn't give me any more confidence. I don't have any more, you know, faith and confidence in the dollar itself.
Well,
but the world still needs it for now, at least.
Miles, is your dollar buying a lot more this year than last year? I don't think so. The dollar is dropping. Uh-huh. You're comparing the dollar with other
worthless.
You know, you can't get worthless currency. Sometimes. You know, what you need to understand is you've got all these fiat currencies sinking, and mm-hmm. some of them sometimes will go up for a little bit of air, and yeah. the others will sink, and then they just take turns. And right now, the dollar is a little stronger, but the dollar is not strong. Right. If it was strong, the price of oil would be at $50. You wouldn't have shortages of anything. No, the dollar is not, it's just an illusion. You said, Mike, the Dixie mm-hmm. is a distraction,
right?
Really.
And I think the reason I never really talk much about the Dixie is just because it's the standard for the international trade and everything else, because we have the reserve currency. So everything is kind of measured towards a Dixie. And so just looking at that gives you a false sense of I guess perceived value, just because corporations and everybody who's taking out debt usually needs the dollars, and of course the euro dollar scheme, I've yet to really figure that out yet. But yet, as far as what the actual domestic dollar does for us here, it doesn't provide me more purchasing power. So it's like, why would I even really concern myself with a graph that doesn't pertain to me directly as far as my pocket is concerned? The economy, yes, but not me personally. So that's just my little two cents there.
And I guess for us who espouse gold and silver, and I continue to do so because they've held their purchasing power for thousands of years. And yes, in the last year, over a year, mm-hmm. they've come off. So someone might say, well, they're not a good protection versus falling currencies. But I think they will. That's the way markets are. There is a bit of manipulation.
Yeah.
But There are hundreds of fiat currencies that died, and the dollar, I think, is worth, 3 cents to the dollar compared to 1913 when the Fed was created.
Craziness. But yeah, on another note, something that might be a precious metals price booster possibly is the continuous developing of geopolitical events. And so here's something that I grabbed off Disclosed TV not long ago, but it's just more of the tensions between Taiwan and China, and how it looks like the U.S. has already, well before now, put some troops in Taiwan to help with some training type activities. But typically speaking, whenever stuff like this jumps off, that usually is favorable for metals, but we could be in a different world these days. But do you think, what's your thoughts on this? Could this be that catalyst or more of a distraction, or what do you think if this stuff develops into anything worthwhile?
Well, you have to go back to 1949, 1950. Mm-hmm. There was a Chinese Revolution, Civil War, and basically Taiwan is a renegade province of communist China or China. Up until the early 70s, I think the U.S. did not recognize the People's the Republic of China, didn't mm-hmm. Communist China. They recognized the Republic of China, which is Taiwan. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think it's just a lot of saber rattling, distraction. It's like with Iran. We've been told that there's going to be a war with Iran for the last 20 years, and there never is. Mm-hmm. I think all this is more and more just distractions. They want to scare the general public. We've got the enemy, it's China. And the Chinese want to say the same thing. We've got the enemy, it's America. But who knows? I could be wrong, but you could have something happening in Taiwan. I would say Taiwan would be, let's say, Hawaii decides to leave the United States or Alaska and become independent. You would think that the United States would have a claim still to those states.
Yeah.
And then you'd have China trying to protect, or Russia trying to protect Alaska from the U.S. So I can understand why the Chinese communists feel a bit like, you know, what's the U.S. doing here in the South China Sea, protecting Taiwan? But that's how it's been. Even though we know as well that the U.S. and Wall Street financed the communist Chinese, but they also financed the Chiang Kai-shek, the guy who fled, you know, the nationalist Chinese during the civil war. That government went to Taiwan. So it's all kind of a theater as well. Yeah. I would say.
Yeah,
if anything, it would help. It would help the bankers, as usual, the very wealthy. Mm-hmm. If there was a war, there'd be a lot of death and destruction, and there'd be more excuse for cracking down on the general public, not only in China but here. Maybe the Chinese are concerned about the Evergrande and the property collapse. If there's trouble, they can always start a war and crack down on the public there.
Right,
and here as well.
Right. The military-industrial complex has been lagging lately because there hasn't been billions and billions pumped into that because it's been diverted to the pharmaceutical industry. But at this moment, I think that, you know, war is always on the table just because it's so profitable for those that are participating on both sides, because it's the people who benefit in the middle. And of course, it just seems like it's something that can be thrown out there as one of many other distractions that we are trying to keep an eye on. But speaking of which, outside of that, the debt ceiling. It looks like, you know, an extension was provided, $483 billion or whatever, was put out there to get us to December 3rd, as if, like, what's going to happen between now and then? But for on your side, looking in, what do you see about all this debt ceiling stuff? Because Biden press conference the other day talking about, you know, a DEFCON 10 type event, you know, what would happen if we don't, you know, pass, you know, remove the debt limit or whatever. He was talking about the worst case scenario, painting a very dark and doom picture of retirement savings, stock market dipping. But then again, also, Trump told us that under Biden's watch that would happen. And so it's kind of like they're all in lock and step with this script out there, but the debt goes on for now. But yeah, what are your thoughts on outside of the water?
I don't think the system as we have now in the U.S. or even here in the U.K. with all the unfunded liabilities for pensioners, for Medicare, Social Security, everything. It's not sustainable anymore. And eventually it will collapse from within, or the way it will collapse is that the currency will be worth so little that you will get your retirement check, but it won't buy much. So actually, if you do have something that is not expected, because usually these debt limit or debt ceiling crises are solved at the last minute. But I would say, yeah, it would be very painful if everything imploded, but it would be the best thing that could happen in the long term. And I'm not saying it's a good thing for people. A lot of people will get hurt. But I would say it would be better for it to happen now than to happen in 5-10 years.
Right.
Because it's a huge problem, and you can't push it under the carpet anymore. Right. And maybe ironically, even though the current president is seen as a bit of a joke, and we see people shouting things about him at football stadiums and NASCAR races. Yeah, even though we see that, at least, and even though it was a screw up in Afghanistan,
he's gotten
the U.S. out of Afghanistan, like it or not, and I think that's a good thing. I'm not saying.
But see, watch this. But one thing about pulling American troops out of Afghanistan. But it looks like from all the reports, the immediate backfill was China. Like I saw an article, the lights came on at the base. So it's like they didn't do it because they wanted to. They didn't do it because they wanted to bring American troops home. Yeah. It was more so we owe them. So
well, maybe that. But There are people who, even Trump said, we need to look after America and not interfere in the world anymore. Mm-hmm. So maybe that isn't a bad thing. And what I'm trying to say here, yes, if everything implodes, yeah, he'll get the blame, Sleepy Joe. But actually, it could be a great thing going forward. Who knows?
and speaking of what you mentioned earlier, here's just a little article about, you know, the Truman Show, about how he's performing on stage with the script. So this is the video I'm referring to where they're talking and all types. They're just reading from scripts, but it's like a Saturday Night Live on a Wednesday. But as far as the can be kicked down the road further, the pain, it would be better if it happened now because it's no avoiding, as you mentioned. Mm. But yet the longer we wait, that much more pain that we'll experience, to the point where just thinking about how things are unsustainable now, the pain that's inflicted would already hurt, because if everybody lost everything that they thought was theirs, that's a shock in and of itself. But then to kick it down even further to where you'll lose everything that you thought was yours, and then the shelves will be empty as well because they've distorted things, withheld things. And so that's even more pain down the line. So, but it's inevitable. But then here's one of the benefits for people who are aware, and it happens to be, I'm going to share that graph about the how undervalued the metals are, and we can all witness this, but yet just the, as you said here, with the gold divided by the M2, it's extremely undervalued because there's been trillions and trillions and trillions of currency created, but yet it doesn't reflect an actual price of an ounce.
Gold. We had a bit of a blip up last year, as you can see there. And now it's come off, but it's got a lot of room on the upside. And at least if they try to delay this inevitable collapse, mm-hmm. at least it gives us more time to prepare for it. Mm-hmm. And by preparing, I don't mean just buying gold and silver, doing things in your community, making friends, mm-hmm. having like a network of friends in the community where you can help each other out. I think that's the important thing. Because when the collapse comes, and it's not going to just be in the U.S., it's mm-hmm. going to be in the U.K., it's going to be in Europe. In Europe, they almost had it in 2012, you know, with the sovereign debt crisis. And that would have spilled over all over the world, even in the U.S.
Yeah.
That's when the bond yields in Italy, Spain, Greece, and Ireland, they were going double digits. And then the ECB had to come out. Mario Draghi said, we're going to throw everything at it. And they bought all the bonds. And you know, now Italian 10-year yields are below 1%. But they just delayed the inevitable. And once we're all connected in terms of, you know, the banking institutions, all the debt, it's all like connected. So if Italy goes or the UK goes, everywhere we will go, mm-hmm. you know, everyone will go down. And it's not just in the UK and the US that people need to prepare. It's also right. in Western Europe. But it's not the end of the world. And there's opportunities as well, I would say, right. in times of crisis. But if you're not aware of it, if you're not watching Mike and Mario or other alternative channels, if you just follow CNBC, Bloomberg, CNN, then... it's going to be hell on earth mm-hmm. kind of for these people, because psychologically they're not prepared for it, but we're prepared for it.
Right. Speaking of which, a couple of questions. So feel free to throw out a couple of questions and we'll touch on them. And so here's something from Albert. This is a moment ago, but it says, if rising gold is the alarm bell for a failing currency, and we know that the alarm is rigged, how do we address and expose the rigging? And that's where I think, you know, GATA has been trying to expose the rigging for the last 20, 30 years, and it hasn't really made much of a difference because the system in of itself is rigged. So it's like everybody's in on it. So I don't know if there's any real thing really you can do to expose it other than take advantage of it. You know, that's
That there will come a time, though, when the riggers will need the price higher. Mm-hmm. That's when everything is imploding and they have to back their liabilities with gold and silver. You see, if the housing market collapsed, I think Cliff High said that China might need to revalue gold if the Evergrande thing gets worse.
Yeah,
the riggers eventually will have to let go the gold price go. They rigged the gold price in the 60s, and eventually that unraveled.
Yeah.
But the other, the question you need to ask yourself, do you really want to finance governments and bankers? Because that's what you do when you, instead of having $10,000 in gold and silver, you mm-hmm. leave it in the bank, and then they'll take your balance in the bank, they'll leverage it, and make money off your back, you know, this system.
Right. And I think also a part of the rigging is allowing central banks around the world to accumulate. And so there's been several central banks throughout the last several years, you know, getting large amounts of gold at a very affordable price. And the thing is, I'd imagine they're using their own currencies, probably converting them into dollars or whatever, and then they're buying this metal at a much cheaper rate using their own fiat fake currency. So when you got Indian central banks and Brazil's and Russia and China, they still have plans for gold at some capacity. So take advantage of the manipulation, do what they're doing, get your weight up ultimately. So but yet, here's another thought here about Afghanistan from Tony B. Where'd it go? Let me see here. Where did that question go as a thought? It says, Tony says, how is the U.S. being out of Afghanistan good? Now you will see the increased terrorists all over the world.
Can I answer that?
Yeah, go feel free.
Who's in charge of the T's, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want to say the word.
Right.
It's not.
Right, the T's are the governments themselves, as well as the supporters of those. So,
yeah.
And that's a part of what they want. So, and that's why having left $85 billion worth of equipment there, I've saw little stories about how there's trucks, U.S. trucks in Pakistan and some in Iran. So, like all that stuff was dispersed, and if that is true.
The other thing I would say about that comment is that. The U.S. has wasted $2 trillion there over 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So they weren't there to do what he was saying, like keep terrorists at bay. They were there to enrich the military-industrial complex.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't see.
And then I've also heard a lot about, you know, how they use Afghanistan as a way of funneling, as well as using the whole money laundering schemes with businesses and entities and all that other stuff in and out and through other countries or whatever. So, because then those funds were actually, you know, tracked and traced and reports being given on where those funds actually went, other than we just know the total was spent. So a lot of that ended up in a lot of those politicians' bank accounts and overseas accounts.
And there's a lot of cash flow derived from the poppy industry, isn't it?
Right.
As well.
Very true. So here's a little joke here. I thought Michael says, how can a bank do a bail-in when you're overdrawn?
That's a good one.
Oh man. So speaking of which, I don't want to go, let me see here. So Rolf put out a question, said they spent $2.2 trillion, but $2 trillion went back to Washington. That $2 trillion went into all the military and ammunition companies.
All the big corporations. What's his name? Dick Cheney. Halliburton. Yeah.
Has anyone noticed how many self-storage facilities popping up? Miles, I have not. I haven't noticed it, but it makes me wonder if that is true, then why? And I'm thinking, like, for those self-storage places, to me, those would be an obvious place to go vandalize that if stuff really hit the fan, because people are storing things that either they don't need or things they're trying to hide. So if you want to easily have access to, you know, somebody's treasury trove of some kind, hit one of those self-storage places, because you never know what you find in it. You might find a lot of stuff of value in there.
A few years ago, there were some programs on about storage. Storage. Do you remember? Like, they were quite big, maybe 6-7 years ago, or they had up on TV.
Uh-huh.
People who would go look for storage.
Some shows. Yeah.
And bid on it. But mm-hmm. I haven't noticed here in the UK if they're growing. Maybe they are. I don't know.
And so as you get ready to draw it down, I want to get your thoughts, because, of course, I can't help but notice all the hype on what's happening in the crypto space. And so with Bitcoin well above 50,000, there's a lot of people are extremely excited, a lot of maximalists. I had Andy Hoffman on the show earlier this week. And he was talking about how he sold all his gold and bought Bitcoin. And we were going back and forth on the channel a little bit earlier this week, but you know, given it, Andy sold his gold at around, you know, a little under 2000 or whatever it was, Bitcoin had crashed right at that same time. So where he's probably, you know, 1 ounce of gold, maybe for around one Bitcoin. So I was saying in this 5-year span, numerically, nominally, look like he's done well. But then again, you know, in the future, moving forward, no future results are guaranteed. So, but yet for him, I guess it's paid off. But what are your thoughts on this whole Bitcoin 55? Is this something worth cheering about or no?
I remember Andy Hoffman a few years ago. It was 3-4 years ago, and he used to be a silver guy. And yeah. Then he just gave up on gold and silver and went into Bitcoin. I guess he's done well. I'm sticking to my guns, gold and silver, but I do have exposure to cryptocurrencies. Mm-hmm. I publish all my videos on Hive, DTube, Steemit, mm-hmm. Odyssey or Library. Mm-hmm. I invested in a Bitcoin fund in mm-hmm. 2016. That's done really well. Mm-hmm. It's not invested in Bitcoin itself, but in the infrastructure.
Yeah.
It's a private fund, so I haven't been able to touch it really. So, mm-hmm. but the value, all the shareholdings in the fund is doing really well. So I'm happy with it, but I think it's very speculative. I think it's going to go a lot higher, but I think eventually gold and silver are going to shine.
Yeah.
And you could see, I think Cliff High and a lot of people in that kind of space are predicting Bitcoin a lot higher, but they also see like a 90% haircut after we go into, let's say, to 100 or something. Mm-hmm. They see a huge drop, and they see people actually moving to gold and silver. You can't really predict these things, but yeah. I'm comfortable with having the metals. Mm-hmm. I think cryptocurrencies are more speculative, more volatile. They don't have the track record of gold and silver, thousands of years, and that's the reason why I favor them. Yeah. But it's up to the individual to decide. I'm not here trying to stop people.
Yeah.
But for example, the fund that I put some money in 2016, I put very little, but it's gone up like 25 times. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
that's what I would say about cryptocurrencies. Put in, you know, a little bit, an amount of money that you would be comfortable with losing altogether, and just leave it there. And and it's not just Bitcoin. And mm-hmm. that's why you need to get involved and do your homework and look into it like I did with the platforms that I publish on. For example, this week I have some Hive coin. Mm-hmm. And it had been trading between like 60 and 70 cents. And a couple of days ago, overnight, I was asleep. It mm-hmm. went to 170.
Yeah, saw that.
And then it... But then I got out of some of it that I had, mm-hmm. because a lot of times you hold it as Hive power, mm-hmm. but I had a little bit of Hive. So I sold that into Bitcoin, mm-hmm. Actually Ethereum. So I've now got some Ethereum from that.
Yeah.
And so you got to be nimble, right. Even though I don't trade it. But when I see something go up like that, I think, you know, let's ease off. So, yeah, it's not just Bitcoin. There's thousands of other coins out there, and you need to do your homework. You need to learn about your private wallets and everything and how to keep it there. And it's getting harder and harder, though, to deal to go from cryptos to fiat, because a lot of banks here in the UK don't let you do that anymore.
Yeah, I think, you know, as far as dipping and dabbling in our space, it only takes a little in the right place at the right time that can, you know, lead to just enough to do more of what mm-hmm. you're trying to do, whether it be get weight or get out of them and get into some of the main coins or whatnot. So,
and I think, I can't prove it, but I think there is a little bit of the powers that be involved in cryptocurrency. It's almost as if they want you there and not in gold and silver. But
yeah, I believe that is a part of the case. And then even also this week, one of the community members that we just put something out there mentioned the new, let's put it right here. So Michael Otto says, all you need is the protocol, the ISO 22022. And so I actually did a little dive into that. And so that's actually a legitimate payment messaging system type of ordeal that is created out in some entity, whatever. I don't know. But anyway, so this is a little visual aid here that I also came across, and it lists a couple of the projects that's a part of the future, it, apparently. But it says the Interledger protocol family of this ISO 2000. Then we got Ripple here. We got Stellar here. We got Algo here, USDC here, and then all the companies that's participating in this system. So if all this is legit, then these are some of the projects that are a part of the system that they're trying to implement. Well, implement.
JP Morgan is there, so it can't be legitimate.
But these guys, yeah, so these guys are definitely in on it. So, yeah. But yet, just those are some projects that might have an opportunity. So, hey, you know, take your own risk at it. But anyway, we're about that 50-minute mark. Mario, let's get ready to wind down, man. Let's end on some good news, man. It's a Friday. Anything you want to share with us before we dial back?
Yeah, just enjoy yourself. Try to, not focus on the news. And here in the UK, they're still pushing this health crisis, which is really frustrating. Yeah, go enjoy and do what you like. I like playing golf. I played golf yesterday. I'm going to play tomorrow again. So yeah, enjoy life and don't let it get you down. And be aware of what's going on. And so it doesn't scare you when things are, you know, I'm not surprised with all the what's going on, the stagflation. Mm-hmm. We were calling it, you know, a year or two ago. But there are some people who still think we have deflation. But I think those people now are, they're discredited, in my opinion, because the proof is in the pudding, right now.
Yeah, and so for me personally, I like me on the spiritual side of things, Mario, I've been trying to do more investing into my spiritual accounts by, you know, reading the Word of God, trying to just sharpen myself up, build up my faith, because I think, you know, I definitely need it now, and I definitely don't need more of it in the future. So, and I've been talking more about the spiritual essence of things on the live streams during the week. So just continue to do more of that, just because I want to talk more about stuff that, to me, matters well beyond the things we see now. And so I think a lot of people...
Yeah, I mean, that's a good thing. I do think about those things, you know, this spiritual side. And I think it's a lot of it as well is the golden rule, isn't it? Treat others as you'd like others to treat you.
Yeah, so, which is what we need more of that now. But you'll never hear anybody, you'll never hear Biden... mention anything of these, you know, puppet leaders mention anything to do with loving other people, treating other people kind.
And it's always about go out there and buy keep shopping. It's like George W. Bush after 9/11. He said don't stop shopping, go out and shop.
Right,
that's the kind of leaders we have.
Yeah, that and more fear. This is what's happening. But anyway, it goes on and on. But anyway, for everybody tuning in, appreciate you guys hanging out with us. Hit the thumbs up button. Go check out Manico64 on YouTube. And also, if you're coming across this late, Rethinking the Dollar is where you can find me as well as everything else. But be blessed, be safe, and have a great weekend. We'll see you guys later. Peace.